Hi there, and welcome to another edition of the Why Pod, where we highlight everyday Wyoming leaders. This is a conversation with Tess Mittelstadt from the Habitat for Humanity, the Heart of Wyoming. This is a 30-minute visit that included her thoughts on what to change when you're starting a new position, focusing on processes over outcomes, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. So, let's get to it. Here's Tess Mittelstadt.
I am Tess Mittelstadt. I am Habitat for Humanity's Executive Director, and I've been so since June of this year, so quite some time. Before this, though, I was with Make-A-Wish Wyoming as their Director of Development. And as a statewide organization, I just had such good exposure to working with different people and fundraising on that scale, which I think was extremely helpful and hopefully is advantageous for my job now. Before then, I was just a college student trying to figure out what the heck I wanted to do. And so I went to school at Colorado State, have a degree in political science. Ouch, mom and dad. I thought I would want to go to law school, and I had to have kind of a moment of understanding with myself if that's really what I wanted to do. Did I want to be a lawyer, or did I like the idea of law school? And it turns out that I think I would have liked the idea of law school more than I would to be a lawyer. So as soon as I was getting ready to graduate, panic set in, and I was like, I thought I would knew what I would be doing, and I didn't. I had no idea. And I had had a little bit of exposure to Make-A-Wish's mission. I was a Chi Omega in college, and that was our charity of choice, and I had just enough exposure to be interested. And a girlfriend of mine had, I think she really just wanted me to like move to Denver with her and rent this really expensive loft. And so she had sent me all these jobs to be in Denver. And one of them was to be with Make-A-Wish Colorado. And I had called and I had done an interview to possibly be their intern. And then it dawned on me, like, maybe I should reach out to Make-A-Wish Wyoming as well. I love Wyoming. I'm from Wyoming. I love being home and the idea of being able to figure out my stuff before I jump into something else was really, really exciting to me. So I ended up meeting with Morgan, who's Make-A-Wish Wyoming's executive director, and she very kindly like accepted my strange email that said, "Hi, I don't know if you have an internship program, but I would love to just see what your work is on a day-to-day basis." I think that's something people don't always recognize about nonprofits is the work that you see in the community looks very, very different on the back end, and I was aware of that, but I didn't know what that meant. So I met Morgan for a cup of coffee, and I said, "Tell me what I can do in office to understand the work that you're doing, and I can help with marketing, or I can help with events, or I can help with volunteers, and you'll have me for the whole summer, and I just want to see what you do." And she so graciously said, "Yep, let's figure it out." And so I had felt like I had myself a little bit more figured out before graduation. At least I knew what I was going to be doing over the summer. And right before I graduated, Morgan had sent me an email saying, "Hey, I want to let you know that there's going to be a position open in our office. If you're interested, you should read the description and see your thoughts." And I thought to myself, "Whoa, that's a little serious. I'm just getting ready to graduate college. I'm not sure that I'm ready for that." But then at the same time, something about it said, like, why wouldn't I? Like, why am I scared to do that? Or why am I scared to put myself out there? So I ended up applying for that job. And then luckily Morgan probably saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And so then I became their community relations coordinator. Oh man. And we did a little bit of everything. I did volunteers, I did events, I did marketing, and then any sort of special project was my project, which was great, and just a little bit of understanding of how everything worked. And in a small office, everybody has to be on the same team, and I learned that really, really early on, and I appreciate that. And then I became the director of development, and then did that for 2.5 years, and now I'm here at Habitat. So that's how I got to be here, and it's been quite the change, but a good change, and I'm still so new and so much to learn.
So we were talking a few minutes ago about how there's a hesitation or uncertainty and an excitement about going from a previous position to a new position. How did you think about do I leave a place where I'm really happy and I'm successful versus this new adventure, this new challenge?
That's an interesting thought. I think it's more of a conversation of contentment, and I think that's scary to me. I think I recently was having a cup of coffee with a friend, and she said if I could have told her, you know, she said if I could tell my younger self anything, I would have told her, like, it's okay to be content a little bit. It's okay to not always be on to the next thing and always be on to the next thing. But I, unfortunately, good, bad, or indifferent, like, I like a challenge and I like something new. And I felt like I had served to the best of my ability as director of development, and I loved granting wishes, and I loved what we were doing for those that we were serving, and I just wanted to do more. And I couldn't do that in that office, unfortunately, which was just so crushing. Like, I loved our mission, and I loved who we worked with, and we had a great team, and the work I was doing, I felt like, mattered. And so to consciously say, I'm going to be done with that, I'm going to seek elsewhere, it's just hard. There's no easy way around it. But at the same time, isn't it good to have something that you love so much and be able to say, like, hey, I think I'm going to try something else. And I think I knew once I started to feel like, well, maybe I should start looking, or maybe I should start exploring. I can only ever hope that people have the relationship I had with Morgan at that time to be able to say, like, I love the work I'm doing. I love this office and I love this staff. I just have to see what else I can do. And to have someone who's on your team to say, like, I hate that, but I also get it, was just such a gift. Because I don't know if I would have jumped headfirst into that process unless I had someone who was so on my side about taking that next step.
And you said she was actually more than being sad and encouraging. You weren't necessarily, you know, overconfident about, I've completely got this new job nailed, I walk in 110% qualified.
Yeah, not quite. I think one of the things that, it's just the other day, somebody asked me, like, what advice would you give other people? And my advice was, like, tell people what they're good at, because I don't always think people see that for themselves. So I do that for people that you care about. Tell people, like, hey, you're better at that than you think. Because I think far too often you're looking for all the reasons you couldn't do something. And so sometimes you just need that extra push to say, like, you have all the capacity in the world to do this. You just have to choose to do it. And it's an important thing to look for. But it's now in my mind, I'm like, well, I was given such a gift of having someone say, like, you can do this, or you have the capacity to do this. You should do that for other people, because that's not always the case. People aren't always told that. So it was. I'm sure Morgan would laugh to hear that, like, that was such an important component of me moving jobs. But at the same time, I felt like I had her support, and I had, and she had my best intention at heart, which was really important.
Mm-hmm. Sign of a good leader.
Yeah, well, that's what I think.
Yeah. And there must have been something about Habitat in particular, because mm-hmm. anyone who looks at the numbers knows how many nonprofits mm-hmm. there are, mm-hmm. and they're all great causes, mm-hmm. And have opportunity for someone to help them. If there were one or two things that really appealed to you about Habitat, what were those?
I would say my number one thing, and something that I really couldn't get past, was how fundamental it is for someone, how personal the work is. Everybody lives somewhere, really. And when you start looking at the world in that sort of a sense, being able to help people who were in a position to accept that help and to better the lives of not only them, but their family, was something to me that I couldn't, there was so much long-term to that, more than 30 years. But at the same time, you're looking at people and saying, like, kids are going to grow up in these homes, and people are going to go to college because of this house, and people are going to get better jobs because of this house. The house is really just the start of it. And I think once I was interested in this position, and then really just jumped into understanding what Habitat does and why that mission has been successful, that's what I continue to think of, was that if I can do a very good job here, other people then have access to other things, and that's such a ripple effect. The other thing too is, like, you're building within our community. We're literally constructing within our community, and so there's a community service component of it that I was really, really drawn to. And I was so envious. formerly, I had thought of a million ways to connect people with mission and make a wish you of this incredible mission of serving children with life-threatening conditions. And you were bringing that to people in really, really unique ways. But the ability for people to be hands-on with that wish is actually pretty complex. So we have great volunteers who help, and we had all of these people who wanted to be involved, but to have people actually participate in mission was a challenge and something that I spent so much time thinking about and so much time overcoming. And when I was interested in working with Habitat, I realized there's something every single day that someone can go do to support our mission. There's a way that people can be hands-on every day with Habitat's mission, and that connection to community and that investment on the part of volunteers was just so unique and something I felt like I would be disappointed if I didn't try to be a part of.
Well, and for me, before you took this position, yeah. I didn't know nearly as much about Habitat as I
right.
do now. And
me
there
either.
Are probably a lot of people who don't really know mm-hmm. that much. A couple of things you just referenced, the way that people get involved with Habitat as people who end up in homes that mm-hmm. you built might be something worth mentioning. And also, you mentioned a variety of ways that people can be a part of Habitat, people from the community who want to help in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. I think what's fascinating to me is that it is a construction project. It's a large scale. We're building a home. And what I loved about it was that any way, big or small, we have volunteers who volunteer 2 days a week, religiously. They're there every Tuesday, every Thursday, probably most Saturdays, because they believe what they're doing matters. That's spectacular. We have, we were actually just talking about this, we have a local church in town who really just loves our mission, and they said, how can we help? And so they bring lunch to our volunteers once a month. That's how they choose to serve and how they choose to be involved. And I finally met the woman who was kind of the lead on that project, and she came in and she just kept saying, thank you for letting us do that. And I felt silly, like, what? No, how can I thank you? And how can I show you the fact that that matters? And so what I love about Habitat's mission is it's not just the big things, it's those small things that start to really, really start to make a difference and really start to shape that. And so, we had a volunteer recently, and he said this to me, and I was like, I would have never thought of that, because I don't spend the time with volunteers on the construction site with homeowners like he does. But he said, like, you watch homeowners change, and that's his favorite part. This is a gentleman who has volunteered with us for years and years and years, and that's why he's there, because he likes that. And so it's really the fun part about being new is learning all of those things that are bringing people joy and filling people's cup, and getting to say, like, oh, my job is to facilitate that. My job is to make a space for which everybody can be involved. And at the same time, we're addressing a really giant issue in our community, which is affordable housing.
And how long have you been in this position at this point in time?
I accepted the position in May, and finally was in office full time in June. So we're just coming up on 6 months, and it has been a really busy 6 months.
Absolutely. Some of the stories that you've shared. One of the things that we were talking about was you shared an example about your grandfather
mm-hmm.
and how it's playing into some of what you're focusing on in this first 6 months.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know me very well, I wouldn't say I'm a great athlete. And I remember being pretty young and wanting to learn how to golf. But my grandfather is this spectacular golfer, and he's a coach at heart. And so I think it's really easy for him to say, like, well, I'm going to teach you how to do this. And I remember I was doing all sorts of wild things. But what I loved about it was that in those moments, my grandpa told me time and time again, everything is process over outcome. When the process is flawed, the outcome will be flawed. And I don't know if I've ever been in a role where I felt like that rang more true than where I am right now. In my role at Make-A-Wish, we spent so much time talking about process and the refinement of process that I realized that if I were to kind of come up with a theme for, like, my management style or how I think organizations can grow, it's process over outcome. And I don't want to say that in the sense that outcome doesn't matter, because outcome is the people we're able to help. But think about how many more people you're able to serve when your process is correct. And I think that's a really manageable way for me to jump into a new role without feeling like I have no control or I don't know where to begin. It's if you start with process, that's something you have control over. And so we're hoping that by really investing in the process of engaging new homeowners, the process of working with people in the community who want to financially invest or invest their time, that the outcome will be tenfold, that we'll be able to serve more people. More people will be able to involved in volunteering and financially.
What I found intriguing about that for myself was when you first asked the question about process versus outcome, mm-hmm. before you shared your story, I would have said I would focus on outcome more than process. And yet after hearing your example, I completely changed my mind.
Right.
In terms of focusing on the small things, because you reference golf and one or two people who listen to this might actually play golf. The way you learn to practice your swing,
yeah,
I think is interesting to golfers, but maybe even to those of us who don't play golf.
Right. I remember and everything. Let me, full disclosure, I'm a terrible golfer and I haven't played golf in a very long time. But there are things that when I was taking instruction or I was taking class or I was with my grandfather that I understood was fascinating. Things like we would put a piece of like duct tape down on turf and I would swing to prove that I could, that the process of my swing could pull that tape up. Or I would stand a foot from the wall and make sure that my swing wasn't going out, it was going up and over. And the thing being is like all of those things had nothing to do with me actually hitting the ball. Everything is process. And so when you do get into a position where you're taking a swing or where you're trying to figure out where to start or how to better serve people, process over outcome. And I think sometimes what's really challenging is like outcome, there are a lot of outcomes that we do have control over. I don't want to say that there isn't, but what do we have control over more than outcome is process. And so I think that's a really empowering way to look at work is to say like, this is something I have within my means to control and to dissect and to rebuild or to restructure. And that's what's going to produce the best outcome for our organization. I do want to be really, I don't know if I would have had that understanding though, if I hadn't have been at an organization that focused so much on process and how do you grant better wishes was a question we asked more times than I'd probably ever like to admit. But what came of that was really, really refined processes. And so moving to a new organization, I think I would have been silly to think that same understanding of work wouldn't have existed.
Well, what you just said made me also think about the conversation we were in about how long do you observe and learn in a new position versus stepping in and doing something. And mm-hmm. the idea of examining the process is pretty active. Like, why mm-hmm. do we do this? And what are the steps that we take? And why do we take those steps? And you also said there are some things, even, you know, short period of time on the job where you have made some adjustments.
Yeah.
And how do you decide, do I adjust this or do I not adjust this?
Oh, man, isn't that a hard question? I think more of the adjustment has to do with immediate next steps. So one of the examples we were talking about is if we're going to focus on process, what is our process of following up with people who have applied? So that was one of those things that the longer that we wait to make that change, the farther out we are from really examining whether or not that process works. And so sometimes for a process, it's about saying like, we're going to try this regardless of if it's going to work or not, but for the sake of understanding if it does. And I think that's a scarier component sometimes because there isn't always going to be that value right off the bat. But I also think there's so much that you don't know that it's okay to say like, hey, I don't know this. Just the other day, we were having a conversation about how we host our application cycles and if we should have, right now we have two application cycles. Should we extend those application cycles? Should we make it year round? There's a lot of opportunity with that. And part of that is also stepping back and letting everyone know, like, I don't know enough about this to make a recommendation, and that's okay. And so I think you have to do a lot of internalizing, and you also have to be prepared to say, like, I can't do everything. And so when you try to do everything, what suffers everything, I guess, quite simply. And so how do you look at that and say, where can I have the most impact right now? And how can that better our situation? Because, I mean, I've put more things on my plate than I would like to. And then I'm upset with the fact that I didn't do things the way I wanted to have them done. And I think that's an interesting way to look at whether or not you step in and make a change or if you don't. The other thing is that there are people who know so much more than I do that I feel like right now, especially in my first 6 months, has been a lot of like asking questions. And not asking questions to lead an agenda, but asking questions for the sake of learning and like understanding. I think your intentionality and the way you talk to people, it's very, very obvious. I would imagine that you have been in conversations where you're like, oh man, this person's trying to lead me to this conclusion. But to really step back and say, like, what questions do I have that are really questions? I'm not trying to make a change. I'm not trying to do anything. I just really want to understand why this happens or why we do this way. And that's harder to do, especially as someone who likes to make change and who doesn't. I think it's exciting, and I understand that's not always the right call for the organization.
That balance you said earlier of not big on contentment, but
right.
What's the right place to be discontent?
Mm-hmm. Right.
As you look forward, I know you have thoughts in mind of additional ways that you might help to serve Habitat's mission, mm-hmm. you might serve in the community. Are there things you're particularly intrigued by or excited mm-hmm. about as you look forward?
I think looking at our community and what our community needs is where any organization should start. So Habitat for Humanity, the heart of Wyoming, serves Natrona County. But there are 1,200 Habitat affiliates in the United States alone. And the more time I spend talking to other people who are executive directors or people who have been with the organization, their specific affiliate for a long time, I realize that it's really what your community needs that should lead mission. So right now we are building a subdivision, which has just been spectacular, and I can take no credit for, because that was well in the works, and the former executive director and board members, former staff, really made sure that that project could come to fruition. But we also have to look to say, like, what else can we do? How else can we serve? And one of those ways could be through critical repairs, which would be a program of building ramps or replacing windows or doing those sort of things for people who may not have access to that, who are happy with their home, the home that they live in and don't want to move, but their current, you know, they can't access something the way they should, or those sort of updates would change their ability to live in their home. So I think that's really intriguing to me. I also think dipping into financial literacy. So with a lot of our applicants, we're realizing that's part of the hiccup, is that people don't feel as if they have the knowledge from a financial standpoint to like make decisions or to start moving forward or doing those sort of things. So who can we partner with in the community to be able to make referrals so people can kind of take ownership of their own circumstance? I'm so intrigued by that, because I also think it will produce just really great partners, homeownership partners, moving forward, because people are going to feel confident in their own capacity to address their circumstance. And the best thing you can tell yourself is, like, we can't be that. We can't be everything to everyone. But we have great people in our community who can do that and who can provide that service. And so what are we doing to invest in those relationships where everything is referral based? So if you are really struggling with creating a savings, then who in our community is really, really good at budgeting and structuring budgets that I could say, hey, you know who you should call? You should call so-and-so. And they would be able to help you just put yourself in a better position. Because I think more often than not, we're asking people to go from, you know, zero to home ownership. And the reality is that's not how that works. The process of that is flawed. And so if we're going to re-reference process, the process should be, we want people to feel confident in their capacity to review their financials and to understand, what am I doing and what's hindrances to me moving forward? And then how to obviously address those. So those are two things I'm very excited about.
Among many, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I gotta calm down about some other projects.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea of community partners mm-hmm. takes me back to maybe a last kind of concept for mm-hmm. the conversation today. The idea of why do it here? Because mm-hmm. you you did go to college outside the state. You had friends who were lobbying to get you
to live in other places. Yeah.
Why? So, and it was a very conscious choice on your part to stay here. Why did you choose here as opposed to the other places you could have chosen?
And we've had this conversation, but what I think is most interesting about Casper is that you can be a part of those things at the ground level, which is really what you're able to do. So there are a lot of places that we could move that have that sense of community or have things that are already very well developed. But maybe for my husband and I specifically, it's the challenge of saying we love this community and we love who lives here. So how do we make that community exist here, exist where we're at? And I remember thinking so often, like, why did I move? Why did I leave Colorado? Or why did I do this? But the reality was, like, we love living here, and we love the people that live here, and we love being able to, like, work and serve in this community. So what is the community missing, and how do we fill that gap is really where I think we spend a lot of our time. So if you want to be the kind of community that hosts, like, neighborhood dinners, then guess what? You should host a neighborhood dinner, those sort of concepts. So again, it's really empowering to say that you can facilitate that experience rather than waiting for someone else to do the work, quite simply. And so I think we like doing the work. And we'll see how long that lasts. But we do like doing the work right now. And we like that other people want to do it. And I think the more you put yourself out there into our community, the more you recognize that people are in that same boat. What was it, last weekend? It's been a really long week. Last weekend, there was, like, a concert at Gruner Brothers. And Bryce was like, I don't know how many people are actually going to be there. You know, it was somebody we were excited to see. And so we thought we would go. And it was packed. There was all of these people who stayed and welcomed this musician into our community and just wanted to, like, create that sense of community. And I think when you look, it is there. You just have to find it.
Mm-hmm. And there was a phrase that you used when we were talking before we started recording, talking about either a sense of justification or this almost like an inferiority complex.
Yeah, I think far too often we feel like we need to justify why we live here. Why we live in Casper, why we live in Wyoming. And I've joked even with you about this, is that, like, for a long time it was like, well, taxes are low, or I can get a great job, or it can, you know, we were able to buy a house, or whatever it may be. But I think more than anything, it's like, why be a part of a community when you can build a community? And that's really that's the draw. And I think the more you can just say, like, we want to live here because we love it. And the more people start saying that, the more other people have permission to say that, which I think is really, really empowering. And there's things about every single community that you're gonna wish that you had. But at the end of the day, it's like, you should like where you live every day, and we do. So why move for right now? Just kidding. No.
we always have to ask the question, but I love your answers to those questions.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, and I hope other people feel as if they can be so forthcoming with the fact that they just like where they live. You don't have to, I don't know. I think there's something really powerful in saying that, like, we just like it. We like our community, and we like our neighborhood grocery store, and we like David Street Station. You know, we like those sort of things. And so lean into that and say, we can have the type of community other people have. We just have to be a part of building it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know I said the last question for you, but I don't know how many people get to come to your office and see what's on your wall.
Oh, yeah.
But there is.
You're really enjoying my artwork.
I am indeed. There's a great phrase on your wall. Would you mind sharing what it is?
Yeah, I have a giant poster on my office wall, and it says, "Work hard and be nice to people." I was joking earlier that sometimes it's a really important reminder to work hard and be nice to people, but I think sometimes we overcomplicate what we need to be doing, and what would the world look like if everybody just worked hard and was nice to each other. Is kind of an interesting, and maybe lean into that. And so if I was going to say we had a mantra, it would be work hard and be nice to people.
I love it.
Cool.
Thanks for everything.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in our notes for this, we will post links to your sites in case people want to get in touch with you, if they want to help in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Because you do really good work in the community.
Well, we appreciate you.